I'm in the meeting.
Oh, yes. Advocate Jelly is in the meeting using that gadget, number gadget. No, it's fine. Wanted just to confirm that you are in the meeting. Without much ado, let me take apologies if there are any.
Good evening, Chair, and good evening to the members. I've got an apology from Ms. Bartlett, who's attending a select committee meeting, and then also Mr. Ryder, who will join the meeting at 7. And then there's an apology from the Minister and the Deputy Minister, who are in an engagement in the Northern Cape. Thank you. You are muted, Chair.
Thanks. There's no one from the Department of Defense other than the Advocate Jenny.
Yes,
Advocate, you wanted to say something?
No, I said I'm unaware of who else is here.
Okay.
But I'm aware of the apologies of the two principals from the department.
Okay. No, it's fine. No, okay. I think your presence is adequate for the purposes of this meeting. So I've concluded apologies. Advocate, we're now on item number 3.
Yes.
So it's a third quarter report plus your response to the, you know, the issues emanating from the meet engagement we had with the private sector, with the industry.
Shall I proceed?
Yes, but let me guide you in terms of time. How much time do you need?
I want to be quick, maybe 20-25 minutes.
20 for both. Okay, let me give you 30 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, over to you, sir.
Okay, I'm going just to ask that the presentation be flighted from that side. This is essentially the third quarter report that we actually are presenting. It covers the period of the 1st of the, July, sorry, to the 30th of September. Because we keep our quarters not on a financial basis, but on a calendar year basis. Next slide, please. This is just about introduction, just to say that.
Next slide, please, can you move to the next slide?
Who's
running the slides?
It's me, Chair. It is moving, but I think the network is slow on your side too.
Can you see Advocate on your side?
No, I'm still on the first slide also on my side.
And members, can you see it? Has it moved?
Yes. Yes. Only the first. We are on the same. Yeah, the first part only. It doesn't move.
It doesn't move. Can you go to enabling editing there, and then you can do anything afterwards? I don't know if that would work.
Yeah, I think you're quite right, Chair. Because when you do that, enabling editing on the left-hand side should show all the slides. If it's not there,
exactly,
then something is wrong.
Nandipa, do you hear that?
Seems like the problem is on Nandipa's side.
I suspect so.
Chair, maybe since Nandipa's struggling, okay, she's back. If it doesn't work for her, I will share from my side.
Okay, enable editing. Oh, okay. No, Dr. Rand Spec, please, the answer for us, but please do it on your side. Please,
okay, Chair. Let's give it a try on this side. Is it visible on your side now?
Absolutely.
Okay, let me just zoom in a little bit. Oops.
And then eliminate the slides on the left.
There we go. Is it correct on your side now?
No, it's perfect.
Okay.
Go to the next slide.
Perfect.
Thank you so much. Over to you, Adam.
Okay, we're just thanking the Joint Standing Committee for giving us the opportunity to report. The reporting is actually done in terms of Section 23 of the Act. And I have covered two aspects mainly. And these are the statistics of quarter three, but also topical matters that are in relation to the same quarter, but even beyond. And that is litigation against the NCCC, including the IT project. And then the second aspect is here where I actually am saying I'll provide a substantive response on the based on the AMD engagement that the Joint Standing Committee has had. Can we move to the next slide? We'll go straight into the statistics. For the period under review, we received and processed 62 applications. These are applications of people who are seeking to be registered under the NCC Act in order to partake in the processes and opportunities in the defense industry. These may include renewals, because registration certificates are only valid for 3 years, renewable. Of the 62, there were also 7 marketing permits that we applied for and processed. And these are a marketing permit. While the registration is your license to trade, a marketing permit is about what you are actually licensed to trade. In other words, the scope is limited to what you've been approved for. Should you wish to change or expand in case of business growing and or opportunities, you then need to actually amend your marketing permit. But the two work hand in hand. While the registration certificate is valid for 3 years renewable, your marketing permit lasts until or during the subsistence of the company until amended. In the same period, we received 27 permits that were approved and processed. And these, there were now no denials. This is now from the NCCC. And the total value of those contracts or contract authorization is 6.8 billion rand. A small explanation here is the following. At every stage in the process of considering these applications until the last process, the applicant must lodge documents that enable the next step of the process, which means you're registered, you now can market, and in case you've got interest of your products and or services, you then have to apply to the NCCC in order to be approved, in other words, granted approval or authorization to can then enter into a contract with whomsoever is interested in your products. And these were actually done where of the 27 authorized permits, it was contracting with 19 countries. In other words, the OEMs in South Africa that are registered under the NCC Act then had those 19 countries that they could interact with. The next category is exports, and I've got it here in brackets, munitions. This is essentially the broader, perhaps 60-70% of what is currently out there in the industry. It is your mortar bombs, your missiles, your vehicles, and your standoff weapons. The permits were 152 that were processed. They had a quantum value of 808 18 million rands, and the exports were to 41 countries. Next slide. We then had also applications approved for 82 importations from 17 countries with a value of 25 million rands. And then we've had two permits authorized for conveyance. Conveyance in the language of arms control essentially is about allowing your surface area to actually be used to transit products of a country most that is landlocked. And that would be a country that would actually require equipment that would either come via the harbor or through the air in terms of airports. And then we've got exports again here. We actually have had 43 applications that were processed, the value there being 137.9 million rands to 16 countries. The difference between these exports and the ones that I've mentioned earlier on, which are munitions, are that these ones are essentially technology that is predicated very much on the Wassenaar arrangement list. In the past, we didn't report on this, but we were eventually required by the Act to also give an exposition of what this actually comprises of at any given time. Next slide, please. This is just a exposition of the quota value, which is quota 3 of 2022, compared to the same quota of 2021. Well, quota 3 had a higher value of permits, although the permits were lesser as compared to 2021 at the same quota, whereas the value of those exports was lesser. So the change is essentially a 6.3%. Next slide, please. We did the same thing also here for imports. Quarter three for 2022 were lower compared to last year this time. They are about 25 million rands from 82 permits as compared to 55.7 million rands last year from 86 permits. And this is a decline of 45%. Next, please. Chairperson, committee members, I took note of the engagement that the committee has had with industry. And what I'm presenting here is essentially not a rebuttal, but it is perhaps a framing correctly to enable the committee to understand essentially what is happening, partly also why is it happening. It will be clearer later on perhaps how I've also framed what was deemed or perceived to be red tape. But essentially with this slide, I'm representing and perhaps negating the narrative that one, the NCACC does not sit frequently or as per the schedule. And I can point out here that the NCACC is scheduled to sit 10 months in a year. They do not sit in December, neither do they sit in January. However, the Secretariat operates even during those periods, and the Secretariat by law can only close 2 days before Christmas and 2 days after New Year in order to continue processing whatever it is that the industry is actually looking for. But also to point out as well that about perhaps 60 to 70% of the industry, they also close during this period where there's actually not much activity, but we actually remain in order to process that which is actually necessary. It could be amendments, it could be housekeeping, it could be anything that is preparing us for the subsequent year in order to be ready. So for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, as at today, there have been 37.4 million exports authorized by the NCACC from 9 permits. Clearly, I chose these countries. They are all countries that actually I could be representing here, essentially. But I chose these ones because I think there's also the notion that there's a problem with the NCACC approving applications that are destined for the Middle East. I think it'll become later as well, clearer in the slides, what the implications of this are and why, because there is an explanation. For the UAE, from 59 permits assets today, there have been exports to the value of 2.9 billion rand. For Turkey, it's 2.017 billion. I think I just need to remove that one comma there, from 18 permits. And for Poland, it's nothing so far because there is a application that is on hold. And the explanation for that will come as we proceed. But I've also then juxtaposed there with a red highlight. Those permits that as at today are on hold, correspondingly for the same countries, where for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, it is 3 permits to the value of 500,000 rand, let me put that as well. And 500 million rand, sorry. And for the UAE, it's 1.45 billion rand. And for Turkey, 10.6 from 3 permits, respectively, UAE and Turkey. And then also one for Poland. I chose then to also add in the presentation the categorization that often is being spoken about, but perhaps doesn't come to the fore. So essentially, when we're saying there's a category A, whether that is approved or that is on hold, essentially, this is what comprises category A. It is sensitive controlled items that could cause heavy personnel casualties and major damage. And they include missiles, bombs, artillery gun, tanks, weapons with a high caliber up to 12.7 millimeters. I mean, from 12.7 millimeters enlarging. And category B is all types of handheld and portable assault control items of a smaller caliber than 12.7. Often sometimes this has been referred to as small arms, including also under the SAPS Act. I need to point out that category A and B tend to work hand in hand, with the result that in the case where the NCACC has actually looked at a permit and said, we are still not supporting an approval of a category A, but we actually do for a category B, it becomes cold comfort to an applicant who actually does not want to accept the permit until the final product can actually be approved. So within what is actually being held or on hold, there is a likelihood also that there is a category B. And then next slide, category C is mostly items that are employed for direct support of combat operations, but they don't have an inherent capability to kill. And this will include communication equipment, radars, and unmanned aerial vehicles. And category D comprises purposely designed demining, clearing and mine protection equipment and other non-lethal pyrotechnical and riot control products. Category E comprises of all those products that are not allowed to be sold. And here we include anti-personnel mines, cluster munitions. This I need to point out and say South Africa is a signatory to the anti-personnel treaty, colloquially referred to as the Mine Bans Treaty or the Ottawa Convention. and we are also signatories to the cluster munitions. The implications for these, ladies and gentlemen, are when South Africa acceded to the treaties and or the convention, it meant that domestically we would have had to do ratification of international law in this case through a parliamentary process. And that would therefore mean production ceases to exist in the country, in that we also would not authorize any exportation, including stockpiles that we may have had. Because when you actually accede to these, you're also given an opportunity, sometimes 5 years, sometimes 10 years, to destroy the stockpiles. And there's a requirement of a Schedule 7 where annually you need to report on your stockpile destruction. And we've actually done a lot of that as far as anti-personnel mines as well as cluster munitions. But I need to point out there and say the 5,000 or so anti-personnel mines that were kept by South Africa for training purposes, because you need to be able to then introduce this and have new recruits within your own defense force to know them, understand them, and to can handle them. The CSIR got involved, and that technology was actually transferred there. They report to us on the downward management of those stockpiles in order for us then subsequently report to the multilateral bodies on behalf of South Africa. Category F comprises all purposely built controlled items that include plants, facilities, test ranges. I think we can then proceed to the next slide. I'll be brief here, except to say that there has been a slight delay in furtherance of user acceptance testing as well as training. This was a result of invoices that were outstanding that actually were unpaid. We've had to now try and locate money, which eventually was released in order to ensure that we could then continue paying the service provider so as to proceed with the training and the user acceptance testing. Next slide, please. From the engagement that the committee had with industry, a question was asked to say, how far are they in terms of being trained on the system, or can they log onto the system? And I think something along those lines. With this slide, I thought, let me just actually frame this correctly for the better understanding of the committee, ourselves as well, in terms of what we are doing. There are three phases to this. The first phase and the second phase are actually happening side by side because they are actually the enablers of the current system that is under design. And this is essentially where us, the secretariat, are the domain user, the system owner. But review agencies, which is your state security, defense intelligence, DERCO, SAPS, etc., also have or will have access to the system where when documents are actually lodged with us and we actually upload them on the system, that is going to be the only entry point where we would be handling paper, because the system is then going to generate everything that is actually required, such that our review department today still come and pick up all photocopies that are related to permits. But once the system is actually working, that would actually be dispersed or distributed through the system to them offsite in order for them to then process and then respond on the platform in order for us as a secretariat to then collate the information and then be ready for both the scrutiny committee meetings, where we will scrutinize the positions that are coming from their review departments in order to make a recommendation for the NCCC. That would also mean once we are done with scrutiny, instead of the books that you see or maybe have seen or know are actually existing, the book would also now be on a digital format that would then be presented to the NCAC team. Then this is going to actually help us with a lot of cost savings, as well as a whole heap of filing, because by law we need to keep our records for 10 years. Then the third phase here is what I would refer to as an extended domain use. And this is where the external parties, in this case industry, would then be able to log onto the system. We are not there yet, but it is actually being prepped on the current system design in order to enable this to happen. What would eventually happen here is entities that are duly registered and in good standing in terms of the NCAC Act would be assigned numbers and codes that would enable them to then from offsite upload their documents that then actually begin the process of what we are currently doing now, both in this manual system, but also in the envisaged digital system. Next slide, please. On litigation, there are two matters I wish to actually indicate to the committee, and that is the matter between Open Secrets and the Human Rights Litigation Center Task are still ongoing, but it is still at case management. However, I need to inform the committee today that we also have had a notice of motion, a notice of proceedings rather, motion here, that has been served on us, and this relates to me in litigation that has been launched against the NCHC on Myanmar. I can bring the committee to say the Office of the Attorney General has been kept abreast of this. They've also engaged the senior counsel in order to brief them related to this matter. Perhaps a brief explanation of this is in quarter four, we reported on exports that were actually authorized for Myanmar. And this was radio equipment. The committee took a decision to actually say to protect the interest and also reputational damage, and these being category C and lower, that could actually be exported. It would seem like the litigation center are not actually happy with it. That is why the matter is actually going or headed to court now. This despite my engagement with them on several occasions to indicate what transpired and why it transpired and all that. But as it is, unlike the first time, we are ready to actually defend the matter. In other words, we will not suffer the previous default judgment where it was actually uncontested. Next slide, please. This, I think, I have shown in the past, it just reconfirms the level of decision-making inside the NCCC processes. And the cabinet committee there is chaired by the chair, Mr. Kungubele, and Ambassador Kujo is the chairperson of the scrutiny committee. And those are all the review departments that support the process. Next slide, please. With this slide, I am just going to talk about the top right column, which is the NCACC deciding. I engage industry on several occasions and at different levels, where I've met CEOs to actually help CEOs understand what the processes are. But I've also engaged where the staff that are junior are sometimes at a loss where when they've actually come through to the secretariat of the NCHC and the documentation that they have is actually not correct, we explain to them what needs to happen for that to be corrected. But there is clearly a gap between those individuals who are clearly not high-tech, and I don't mean it in a disparaging manner, but when they actually get back to the range, there is always a tussle, almost at project management level, going up to CEO. So the insistence at a higher level in each of the entities, that seeks to negate what is required in terms of the processes of the NCA system. I might surmise to say that could also be where the reason arises, partly for the frustration that industry say they do have. But the NCACC, once it has received a recommendation from the screening committee, decides to approve, which is the authorization, to deny, which they normally don't do, but they actually say, in the event things are not clear or that require further work, keep the application on hold. In other words, they avoid the process that actually takes that application off the table, because that actually involves a lot of administrative work. There are cycles. So if you actually say something is actually off the table, it means the applicant should actually begin from scratch. Clearly, it is cold comfort for an applicant who actually expects that their application should sail through. But there are reasons, and valid ones, when the NCC says, let us keep this application on hold. And that is also the result of what I have shown you in a previous slide, where I said, these are the applications that are still on hold, and that is the value of those applications. Next slide, please. I've also created this slide committee to be able to say, at best, this would be a representation of what the influence of country reports is when it comes to the decision-making process of the NCA system, which therefore then means at the level of scrutiny, by the time we recommend on the basis of reports that would have been generated by Defense Intelligence, DERCO, and State Security. And that is a requirement by law. In other words, we don't go onto the internet or check the CIA or any other person, because the approval process of these reports within the respective review departments goes all the way up to the DG, which therefore then means those are positions that they assume given each application, because each application is to be considered on its own merits, that is on a case-by-case basis. What then happens is it then percolates down this funnel in order to arrive at the decision by the NCACC to say, do we approve, do we deny, or do we hold? And the types of reports that we actually get are specific to the permits. But there are times when there is a requirement to do a broader assessment, which is a country profile. But there is also a requirement at times to do a dynamic report that shows the changes between periods in order to trace when which change happened. Some dynamic I can explain is, if a country last month had no negative indications, but the Security Council resolution in New York says that that country is now placed under sanctions, our mission in New York reaches out quickly to DERCO, who then quickly informs us, and then we look and say, what was the resolution? If it is about a travel ban, money ban, and all this, that doesn't fall under the remit of the committee. And I, as the head of secretariat, would not advise them to do anything about it. However, if there is a requirement to do something because there is an arms embargo, that then becomes a point of interest, and I must do the analysis and then provide the advice in terms of what actually needs to happen. But that's essentially what the influence of these reports are. So I may be aware of any other thing that has been happening there, like Amnesty International reports and many other things. You can only read those, you can't factor them, because that is not sanctioned by any of the review departments that are by law supposed to be the purveyors of information as far as the processes of the NCACC are concerned. Next slide, please. I have sought to capture this as red tape because there was a refrain in the engagement that the committee had with industry around red tape. But just to indicate that nothing is done that is actually not within the policy. And this is essentially what the object of the policy is and what the indicators ought to be in order to ensure that then that objective or object can actually be fulfilled. And that is to ensure that there is a compliance, a process that is a compliance with government policy in respect of arms control. And these are the indicators to the right. To implement legitimate and effective transparent control process. And these are the indicators on the right way. We provide a table of schedules of meetings annually. There is a stable cycle of processing. It will become clearer later on when I show you in the other slide as to when do we have cutoffs, why do we have cutoffs, and essentially it is what industry understands. They actually are given each year the same schedule that the NCCC members also have with, that gets tabled at the first meeting in order to be approved, such that we then can distribute it. So as people come to our offices, we then give them the schedule in February for them to know when what is going to happen. Next slide, please. Again, I frame this as a red tape too. And that is just to reemphasize the aspect that says the scrutiny committee, having been apprised of the developments through the reports that I've referred to earlier, having discussed, then recommends. In other words, by the time I go and sit in the cabinet committee and say, ministers, these are the recommendations of the scrutiny committee, we must actually have had a discussion that endorses a recommendation. If we actually cannot arrive at that, we do not proceed with that application unless there are pressing needs that require political discussions that are essentially beyond Section 15 of the Act. Again, once we recommended the scrutiny, the NCACC decides, like I've indicated in the previous slides, and when they do that, it is based on these five criteria. You could call it the prism through which they look when they then have to decide. Next slide, please. This is also a representation of what I tried to capture as, you know, what is called or referred to as red tape. As I've explained earlier on, when I gave the statistics of how many registration certificates we received and processed, how many marketing permits, I'm trying to communicate to the committee here that registration certificates and marketing permits are valid for the periods I've indicated to you, which therefore means what was said by whoever said it at the time of engagement with the committee by industry, that for each application, applicants need to start by registering, that is not correct. It is not a proper representation. I've indicated that a registration certificate is valid for 3 years, renewable. The same thing with a marketing permit. It is valid as is. It changes when an applicant says, I wish to embellish or change what I am now capable of offering in order to be able to get marketed. And that is when it lapses in its original form, but assumes a new form that would show the embellishments. I spoke then and said there are contracting permits, as well as export permits, as well as import permits, and transit permits, the conveyance. These are a cycle that happens on a monthly basis, but that does not require first a registration to be done or a marketing permit to be had. So I'll perhaps encourage industry to reframe how they see this as an impediment or a bar is high, or perhaps to remodel the language of this being red tape. The next slide, please. The next slide, although it's not shown here, is what I call red tape 4, which is a flow chart. The flow chart shows at the top week alpha. Next slide. Yes. It shows week alpha in red, week zero, week four, and week six. That is essentially the weeks essentially through which an application for a contracting permit especially would go. It is completely different when it comes to an application for registration and or marketing, including import. However, what I'm trying to establish here for the committee is to see that between week alpha, which is the initiation stage by the applicant, up to week zero, which is essentially the cutoff, the secretariat cannot do anything with an application, because it actually says that the documentation is incomplete. I think mention was made to say that people go up and down to and fro with documents and they look for us and never find us and all this. Truth of the matter is documents that are not processable, we don't admit or accept, which therefore then means the frustration that might arise before a document is eligible for processing, meaning at cutoff, cannot be ascribed to the secretariat. The Act requires all the participants to actually have an internal compliance program. At the last time of the amendment of the Act, there was a requirement to actually say, do we actually make internal compliance program mandatory? The feeling was not to do it because, one, it would be paternalistic to actually say, industry must now actually have us overlooking on their internal compliance program. But it also said it's an enabler that the applicants can invest on tools and systems and hire individuals with the requisite skills to be able to help them with managing their internal processes, which therefore then means if a registration certificate has lapsed and the NCCC secretariat says, we cannot accept your application because you have a lapsed registration certificate, it means you're not in good standing in terms of the NCCC Act. So regardless of the level of either frustration or sometimes the agony stories that I hear about people being laid off and all that, there's pretty much not much what the secretariat can do, because it behoves the applicant to actually have a prim and proper system in place that can enable them to actually manage this. Then between week zero, which is the date of cutoff of accepting all those documents that are processable, we then do a two-week review, and this is the copying of the same application and sending that through to the review department, who then have 14 days to then respond. And when they respond back to the secretariat, who then compiles the responses in preparation for the scrutiny committee. There it is there in an ember, which therefore then means between week zero and week four, which is 4 weeks. There are 2 weeks of the review and 2 weeks of preparing responses from the review departments in order to then have that ready for the discussion and scrutiny and recommendation by the scrutiny committee for the NCACC. That therefore then means that blue arrow from week zero, an application that would have been received by us has now a 1 to 100% chance of consideration in order to be submitted within the timelines as set out. You would then therefore notice that between the scrutiny committee sitting and the NCAC sitting, there is a difference of 2 weeks, because is it a week four and week six? My little arithmetic still says it's 2 weeks, which then means immediately after the scrutiny committee, the secretariat must now prepare books that are going to form the basis of the NCACC meeting. The lines just below are indicative of what happens when, why. Right at the bottom, I am showing a red arrow, and I'm naming that a period of discovery, where between week zero and week four, we are discovering aspects about that application that actually says, is it recommendable? And this would mean we would also be looking at those reports that would have come from the review departments to then say, ah, this entity says this about that application, that review agency says this about that application, what then becomes the position of the NCC. When we then have moved from the discovery and have made a recommendation being the scrutiny committee, we then get into what I would call framing. We are now putting into place an arguable case in front of the NCACC to say the scrutiny committee considered this application, and in terms of section 15, it is defendable to be authorized. So I've said in the past, but it sounded like maybe I'm not appreciative of the frustrations or the challenges that industry has. And that is to say, at week zero, when we admit documents that are now eligible to be processed, essentially the application is at a default denial. In other words, we have not discovered anything about it. And once we go through the stages of the processing, we then find things that are working in the favor, hopefully, for that application in order for it eventually to scale through and then be seen to be worthy by the NCACC in order for it to be approved. And then the implementation process then gets into place where I, as a head of secretary, then with my system begins to inform the applicant on the outcomes of the NCACC meeting. Very often, there are some people who tend to want to call on behalf of other people. It is a thing that we discourage, because we are actually saying it is the applicant who enjoys that privilege to say how did the adjudication go. And clearly that is also within CAJA, because essentially decisions like these are an administrative act, and they must actually be compliant with CAJA as well. Next slide, please. I think this committee you may have seen before. It just indicates that we report in terms of section 23, and these are the intervals of reporting. Also that when we report eventually we report to the UN in terms of that categorization. I think that's probably the end of my presentation. I hope I stuck to the 30 minutes. If not, I will actually have to buy the committee some drinks. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Nandipa, I kindly note the apologies from Ms. Motapo She will join us a bit late. And Alison Tembu, she is at another committee.
Sorry, I'm in. I'll be in up to 8 o'clock.
Oh, okay. No. Fine. No. Okay, that's fine. Okay. No. Thanks. All right. Mr. Mare, let me just check who else wants to engage on the presentation. It's Mr. Mare so far. Mr. Mare.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Advocate Jede, for the presentation and for the information. There's certainly a lot more information that I think that we got in the past, which is obviously always much appreciated. I want to start off by saying you will recall, and our content advisors can correct me if I'm wrong, in the past you have said that the dual system is in operation. What we pick up from the industry and what you have said tonight, basically that it is not. And so it is correct in line with what the industry told us, that the dual system is not in operation yet. So I just want to find out how long will that still take before that dual system will start with test trial runs and then actually full implementation. On the system, I also want to find out, you have in that one flowchart, red tape 4 flowchart, you have indicated just after week 0, there's a review of 2 weeks where you said that is necessary to print basically all the applications. So my question is, if you want to move away from a paper process and have a paperless process, why do you have to do all the printing then, and why can the scrutiny committee not access the documentations also electronically? I mean, it just sounds very onerous to me and very outdated process, because that will not only save cost, but it will save time as well. Then I think what the industry told us, and you can correct us in that regard, they said that some of the meetings, all the meetings took place, but some of the meetings took place for a very, very short period, 10 minutes sometimes, maybe in half an hour. And then there are a lot of applications that not processed or not considered, which is then postponed until the next meeting. That was a frustration from them. What they've also raised is in cases where it is one contract that has been approved and it is repetitive exports. And I think what they've asked us is, why should that not only be processed by the scrutiny committee and then administratively thereafter, why must that then also again go to the NCACC committee for final evaluation? So that was just one way of saying, the industry is so competitive, and our SARI members or AMD members have told us that in some cases they have lost contracts because it takes so long. When you go back to the one slide where you mentioned the transfers in context, where you mentioned the red under A and B, you have said that those will become clearer later on in the presentation. I must admit, I still don't know why some countries have been approved, and then it's not so many. So maybe you can give us the information. Three in cases of each of those three countries, and then nothing to Poland. So in other words, Poland is nearly R1 billion. So it is a substantial export contract and agreement. And I mean, if I was that company, I would also be concerned if it's not considered. What would be the reasons? Because I don't think any of those countries are under arms embargo. And in fact, I mean, Turkey we've got very good relationships with Turkey. Our chief of SANDF just now paid a visit to Turkey, and we as a joint standing committee is also planning a visit to Turkey. So if there are things that we should know, you must please share with us. And if it needs to be in a closed session meeting where you need to share those with us, please do that. Because if the UN has identified any of those countries that you have put them on hold, it is very, very important, I think, that we must know about that, and that the industry must know that, listen, you are under embargo by the UN, so we cannot consider your applications. So it is absolutely not clear what are the reasons for that. I just wanted to mention to you that, remember, you say that the exporters and the AMD members must have a system. There are about 3 to 5 really big players that you can expect that. But then there are a number of smaller AMD members that cannot invest in a system if they don't know that they will get the dividend or the revenue eventually from their transactions. So while things are delayed, they obviously is in a high risk of losing business. So we need to know what are those things. What the industry has also told us in that, and I think it's that week 0, if my assumption is correct, they have said that if there are documentations that are required, you don't communicate that to them. And it's only when they make inquiries and if they can reach someone to tell them, sorry, yours is incomplete. And I think my question, and I think our committee's question at that stage was also, why cannot not be communicated? Obviously, it's not on the electronic system, but still, you know, to just say someone, listen, your documentation is incomplete. Please come and collect your documentation and redo it. But to wait for weeks and weeks and weeks and then only realize, but listen, there's just one or two faults, and they could have corrected that long time ago. I think what we have realized and what we have experienced in terms of complaints. So it was the whole AMD that raised those complaints. They want to be more competitive, and they have asked us, how can we intervene and liaise with the NCACC so that it can go faster and quicker? And obviously, when they have got certainty in an application process, it is much easier for them to comply. It's also much easier for you to hold them accountable. But in the process, where certainty is such a big doubt. I mean, we can, as an industry, can actually not afford to have what they experience as red tape. And whether you agree with that, whether we agree with that, is irrespective, is irrelevant. It is how they are experience it and how they experience it as a limitation or an impediment on their business and on their competitiveness internationally. So if you can give us information, especially on those cases which you marked in red, it'll be very important, because I am not aware that any of those countries are under arms embargo, because we're anyway exporting to them, not only in terms of this report, but in previous reports as well. So the countries cannot be the problem. And obviously Poland, I'm not aware that Poland is under arms embargo. So if you can please assist us with that information, it would be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray. All right. I think that concludes questions. Over to you, Advocate Jen.
Okay, I will try, because I've been jotting down the questions as they're coming through. I hope I can actually make a coherent response. I'll probably start at the end of the questions because those are the ones that I still remember much clearer. In your engagement community with industry, a number of things or claims were made. I'll frame them as follows. Industry said that they have a competitor or competitors that actually process permits within 6 days. We are not perfect as a secretariat, but would love to learn which are those countries and how do they actually do that. I'm saying this not as a rebuttal, but to actually say arms control is a very expensive business. And if it is actually done in accordance with the laws, regulations, and other imperatives, there is no cutting of corners. We would really, really like to know who or which are those countries. Matters were raised where lifts were spoken about as being broken or not working, the building being problematic, and there's load shedding and this and all this. If the committee, in its wisdom, knows or thinks it can advise us, I would really appreciate in terms of how these essentially would be solved. For instance, the receiving of documents at week zero, as I've shown in that slide, is done on the ground floor, which therefore then means there is no lift required. And in any case, should the lift perhaps be broken or not working because of load shedding, if there was a need, that building has got stairs. In other words, it would not have been certified habitable if we didn't have those stairs, because you would need that also in terms of fire or fire escape. But again, it's the thing that they actually have raised. I don't know how to respond to that, but I wish we could be guided. At week zero and week four, I will try and explain it again. The secretariat does not receive and accept documents that are defective. We turn them bad. So there is no requirement or need to revert to them and say 6 months down the line or 6 weeks down the line, your document is not correct. As I speak to you, the challenge that we have, committee, is where companies that are using courier services like from Durban and Cape Town still present a problem for us, because the courier company always says, I am not taking those documents. I was paid to bring them to you, but never to take them back. So we end up now having a problem saying, how best do we route those back? So the issue around documents that are taking six, whatever, long to respond, I'm keen to know incidents. And I'm not looking at victimizing. I want to strengthen the system that we have. Because we're not perfect, but we can only improve. But it actually helps where there are facts that actually can be gathered that inform such things. Because once claims are made, but they're not substantiated, it becomes a problem. Responding to the issue of 2 weeks of review, yes, the system as is now still requires us to make photocopies. But that is actually going to change with the new system, because the review would not be photocopies. However, nothing would actually change if, for instance, the review takes 3 days, if I can put it that way. Unless you actually say the review is shorter now, 5 days, just give you an example. Therefore, scrutiny can sit twice and NCCs can sit twice. We are not there yet. We still have to explore that. Mr. Mario, you spoke earlier on about a dual system. And you said you understood me to have said it is working, but now you're actually getting sense it's not working. It is working, Mr. Mare. It is not working where industry can log on. User acceptance testing is still meant for us because we are the ones who must say, this works well, this doesn't work well. But remember, the old system is still in place. So that is where the duality is. Immediately the problems and debugging is resolved on the new system, the old system will need to be shut down, and that whole duality is also going to cease to exist. Essentially, what the system will then do is to explore now the extending where industry would then be in a position to can then lock on. And I did indicate that that would require money. Very often when we look at industry, and perhaps incorrectly so, we always say perhaps there's big players, small players, and all that. They are all subject to the same act. In other words, if it is not, or that were not the case, we probably would have said, oh, a person or an entity that has got 890 million rand, which is closer to a billion, does not require NCACC scrutiny. Let them export. As compared to Joseph, who's busy with small screws, or you name it, that is actually giving you a value of a few or a couple of thousand. That is not the case. I need to correct the viewpoint that says exports go back to the NCCC. I am the one who approves export committee. The NCCC, when it sits for those delegations that are within their remit, which is contracting permits, because those have got a political ramification, and the prism through which they look at is still Section 15. Now, when you actually said you couldn't understand what I had said, I will give it as an exposition as to why Category A and Category B are sometimes held back. And if there is a requirement for a closed session, perhaps we need to have that. I could actually advise and say maybe we actually need to do that, but suffice to say the following. I have pointed out that there's three entities that are by law the ones that can actually give us indicators that we then work in both to fashion out a recommendation as well as a defendable case at NCCC. Is Section 15. And those are State Security, DERCOM, and Defense Intelligence. I'm not going to use a country name, but if any of the review departments says, Section 15 says, what is the risk of diversion? You can check it out. And they flag that country to say the information that they have through their own collection, overt, covert, you name it, all the different, we do not support that. From where you sit, perhaps, or anyone sits, you could say there are no Security Council resolutions. Yes, true. But we've got key criteria, the five of those, and they're not weighted. But they each have to be aligned. And if there's misalignment, that is essentially where the committee then would say, we need to correct that, because by the time they actually have to approve, they must understand what informed them. Clearly, they could not sit and countenance a situation where, because it is certain billions, and there is misalignment in terms of compliance with Section 15. Let us look the other way. We'd actually be getting a system that is very turbulent. And I don't think that is actually desirable. I'm not too sure if I've covered everything, but that's about the long and short of what I think. I still remember from what I actually have jotted down. But I am subject to maybe being reminded in case there are aspects that I actually did not respond to.
Okay.
Chairperson, no, I think Africa Jelly has responded. I hope that he will take into account what I've said in terms of the liaison of us and the chief of SANDF, for instance, to Turkey. And if there are issues, I also understand what he said about those agencies, if they flag something of a country or whatever, one of the parties involved, whether it's a country or a buyer or an exporter or whatever the case may be, that might bring up that red flag. But if he can just at one stage, because it can be embarrassing for us and for the Defence Force if we are under the illusion exports can take place, and then there might be reasons why it cannot take place. And I think then he must just have empathy with us. I think in terms of what the industry told us, Advocate Jelius has at one stage give me the advice to approach AMD, and maybe my advice will be back to him, to go to AMD, that they sit with you and that they give you that evidence and the facts as they have given it to us. So that you can sit directly and that you hear it from them. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Mare, I don't think it's the advice or that the committee would want to give to Advocate Jelly. If the industry has any concern that they feel it needs to be addressed by the scrutiny committee or the NCACC, they must write to them directly. And when they're not saying, look, we've been knocking on at that door and we're not receiving any response. The door is locked, it's closed, and even if it's we're allowed in, nobody wants to attend us and so on. I think we have not reached that stage. I don't want us to be a bridge between the industry and the NCACC. Yes, we play an oversight role over the NCACC, but not to an extent that we get to that level where they come to us on matters that they've not conveyed directly to the NCACC. Because next time they come to us, I'll ask them a question. Conveyed this, that to the NCAC, and what is their response to it? So we must encourage a relationship between the two. Is the one who has an issue that must raise it, not the one who must then go to the other and say, but do you have an issue, and so on and so forth.
I fully agree with you, and that is actually what my intent was.
Yeah,
I
did not interfere with you, Mr. Mara. I allowed you to speak, raised all the issues. But I'm just saying what the committee cannot do is to give the advice that you are proposing.
Accepted.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Mara. We have closed the questions and the answers, colleagues. I don't want to take it any further than this, otherwise it would be an unmanageable, otherwise I'll fail to manage the meeting. So Jelle, I think let me thank you for the presentation tonight and the manner in which you have been able to deal with the questions. Of course, it's a competitive industry, as Mr. Mara has said it. They will always come up with the issues, and we still maintain that you need that. What do you call that thing that Dr. Kanyile drives? That That meeting, the big meeting.
The ENDIC.
No. So not the ENDIC, the conference or something with the stakeholders. My mind is completely tired. What do you call that? Is the conference?
AMD. AMD.
Come again?
Elikota.
Yeah, Elikota with the industry, yeah. At least it's another platform where they can voice some of these issues with you face to face. All right, colleagues, we can then leave it at that for now. But that Likuta, we promised, is going to be early in the new year. I'm not too sure if the date has been confirmed as yet. I mean, we're already in towards the end of November.
Are you asking me, Chair?
I'm asking you, say yes.
No, we are going to be invited because we are not running that. ENDIC is running that. We are going to participate because it gives us a platform to engage all and sundry in terms of what we do, why we do what we do, and when do we do what we do. It'll give us an opportunity as well to pick up aspects that maybe blind spots for us and all this. As I had said when we started, we are not perfect, but I'd like to think we are effective. We can still improve indeed, if that is the case. And perhaps in this regard, I may say to the committee, we've got cordial relations in engaging the industry through their chair, the subcommittee on arms control, because I have actually felt that they must be the ones who also help us to become the apostles. If you convert those, they then can preach the gospel properly. I mean, if they are actually there, they make our work lighter in that whenever a member runs to them wanting to grumble, they can actually say, but have you done 1, 2, 3, even without us knowing. But it is because they would have actually said they are the custodians of the knowledge of what the systems are. Because truth of the matter, Chair, is until and unless you actually comply with the act, you're actually going to be frustrating yourself. So companies are always encouraged that they must help improve internal compliance, invest in it both in terms of personnel and equipment to allow or prevent slippages. But I am certain from where I sit that we are actually having good interaction. I am on speed dial about many other things, and I go to wherever I'm actually required to. For instance, right now, we are planning to do an industry outreach now in December, one in Devon and one in Cape Town. We are waiting for the industry to tell us who is ready, where is it going to be held, because we're going to talk to the existing, including new members, to say this is who we are and all that. And essentially, we are the face of government when it comes to this mental health.
Are you done? Thank you so much. Yeah. Yes, no, I was actually referring to the proposed National Defense Industry, Lekhutla. It was meant to be on the 4th to the 5th of May, 2022, and it was postponed, and the minister has said it will take place some early in the new year, and I think that's the platform, and in fact, one of the platforms, but I consider this one very strategic in the sense that it would discuss matters that would also, you know, pave a way forward on some of the issues that you asked us to, you've sought guidance on from us. All right, with that, we'd want to leave it at that. Let's thank you, Advocate Jelly, for the presentation tonight. We can then, you are free to leave at any time when you want to, colleagues.
I want us to look at the close the agenda, what we call the proposed the agenda or the program for the closed meeting on the 2nd of July, 2nd of December. I will ask Velem to flight the agenda and, or the program and talk to it.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening to all members. I'll just go through it very quickly. This is the proposed program for your consideration for next week's closed meeting. And the content of the program is based on discussions that was held in this committee of the things that require a closed meeting, also that was submitted to the House Chair for his approval. That was contained in the submission. And lastly, we also make a provision based on the Chief SNDF's request that there's additional matters that he would also like to raise in a closed meeting. So just to speak to it, there's a quick opening in the morning until 9 o'clock. And 9 o'clock, the proposal is that the meeting starts with an opening of the by the chairpersons, and then also an opportunity for the Chief SNDF to provide any additions that he would like to add to the program if there's anything that doesn't fit under the subcategories that we have on the program. Then the major briefing, the first of three major briefings, is the briefing on the status of South African National Defence Force prime mission equipment, specifically in the SA Army, Air Force and Navy. And this briefing should include key prime mission equipment requirements and plan prioritised acquisitions as to give the committee an overview of what is to come. Then the committee, the program also makes provision for discussion. So there's a nice time slot for a good quality presentation and then a sufficient time for engagement on this. Thereafter, tea is proposed, followed by a briefing on border safeguarding challenges, plan interventions, and technology acquisition and usage for this, which this Chief SNF specifically referred to. Again, there's an option for discussions after that. Then lunch, and after lunch, a briefing on the external deployment, specifically the DRC and Mozambique. And the key focus areas in these would be to include operational readiness, challenges, operational requirements, force morale, and logistical support capabilities. And as members may note, this is very much aligned with the mandate of the Joint Standing Committee of Defense. So I think that will be a good overview of the external deployments, and again, a nice opportunity for discussions after that. Then lastly, just a briefing, a quick half an hour briefing by the Chief SNDF on planned consequence management undertakings and other matters raised by the Chief SNDF. And again, an opportunity for discussions after that. And then it's proposed around 4 o'clock that there's conclusions and specific committee undertakings and resolutions that perhaps the committee can take further if members agree to it, to review these things in the future engagements of the committee. Chair members, that is it. We are happy to make amendments if so required, but we'll hand over to you. Thank you.
Okay. This is what we are proposing, colleagues. 4 o'clock is just indicative. As the rising time, but you remember that they requested 2 days. We have no problem if they come back to us with more issues, because we can just extend the time to the evening. So it's 1 day where we must be prepared to work till very late should the issue demand that we extend the time. We thought with the issues that we have on the table, this is sufficient. I know that they proposed 2 days, but we don't have the issues for 2 days, but we have the issues for a day for now. But if for whatever reason they come up with issues that would require more time, we would instead extend the time to finish, even if we finish at 9 or in the evening, so be it. Colleagues, please do comment.
As you see that for logistics, we are holding this meeting at the Castle of Good Hope. And so in actual fact, they are happy to welcome us on this day, to welcome us, because we had a standing invitation from them anyway. They had all asked us to visit the Castle of Good Hope, hold our meeting there to see how comfortable the place is. But we thought that probably this should be the opportunity. The good thing is the Defense Force building. So they can sweep it, ensure that the meeting is properly secured so that nothing leaks out of the meeting. So I thought I should just add that for logistics side. Mr. Raider, your hand is up.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Sorry, we are load shedding, so my screen may not look like it normally does. Chair, I appreciate the program. I welcome it. I also appreciate the fact that I support the fact that we can work as late as we need and shift into the Saturday as well. I have one small challenge, Chair, that I do have a meeting on that day that I'll need to step out for. It's just to do the final processing on the finance bill that deals with the terrorism funding. So, but it'll just be a case of me shifting out of the room for 2 hours to take a Zoom call in the middle part of the morning. But Chair, I welcome the agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Raider. Any other comment on the agenda, Mr. Mare?
Chairperson, excellent agenda, and the castle is as a venue as well. So and all that the Bilalem has recommended and yourself, I will second that and support that.
Okay, thank you very much. Any objection to this? There is no objection. Nandipa, have I covered everything in relation to this meeting on the 2nd?
Yes, Chair, for the 2nd, yes, Chair. Gunther will just liaise with members about transport. There will be transport on all parks, the 3 parks.
Yes, to the meeting and back.
Yes, Chair.
Please alert the people who will be providing this ground transport that we, for now, 4 o'clock is just a tentative. It may go beyond that. And Mr. Mare will Uber, Raider will Uber. Raider will Uber to his place. All right. It's just that we don't know what time we'll finish, and it's likely that it may be too late. So it's better we have our own transport provided. Parliament normally does, shuttling people from the villages to Parliament. So it's not like out of the ordinary. All right. Is your hand still up, or is the legacy hand, Mr. Murray? I think it was
it's an old end. My apologies.
Okay, thank you so much. I think, colleagues, that's how we are closing the meeting. Please share this with the defense colleagues so that we hear what they have to say. Maybe they have other issues to place on the agenda, or they want it slightly changed so that it's a flow to rhyme with the flow of their presentation, but along the lines that the colleagues have actually proposed. We are interested more in the information that they will be giving us on the day on these specific areas. All right, colleagues, is there any other issue, Nandipa?
Yes, we have
2 minutes. 2 minutes? I'm tired.
Sets of minutes.
Besides,
just want to say something.
Okay, that's under General Motomaji.
Yes, Chair.
Under General.
I heard you saying the Honorable Raider is going to Uber. Is it Uber? What about me?
What about Kenny, who?
Kenny, you can have a lift. We can split the bill.
Can I get a lift from?
And then split the bill, correct? Okay. So please, can you do the minutes? Nandiba, the first set. Colleagues, this is the first set of the minutes, 3rd of November 2022. So this is the attendance register. We're looking for corrections. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. And the last page. Colleagues, I present the minutes for adoption. Any mover?
Chairperson, from my side, I think this was an outstanding meeting, much better than previous meetings with AMD. And I think the way that it was noted and minuted is a very good reflection of what we have discussed. So I will move for acceptance.
The Mare moves. Any seconder?
I second, Ghana equalized against Portugal.
Oh, yes, can see this one. His attention is split between the two activities. Thank you very much for the update. Thanks. The minutes are adopted. Can you move to the second set?
You are muted, Chair.
It's sorry, thank you very much. 10 November 2022, let's complete the record, the attendance record. Thank you. Continue. Continue. Okay. Now at the end, colleagues, I've checked if there are any corrections. Okay, no corrections. Do we accept them as the true record of our meeting? If so, can I get a move on the second then?
The question moves, Chair, for the adoption of the minutes.
The question moves, seconded by?
I will second, sir.
Mr. Ale, a second. Colleagues, I think we've come to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much. Our work continues tomorrow. We're in Bloemfontein for the whole of the day tomorrow. With that, thank you very much. See the meeting again. Thanks.